Famous music by a famous composer. We heard the final movement of the serenade, Eine kleine Nachtmusik by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. And that recording, some 50 years old, perhaps, from the Marlborough Music Festival, the conductor, a famous cellist named Pablo Casals. And here in the studio by the phone line, I have on the line, as promised, the music director of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, Julian Quercy, and the soloist, a cellist, for tomorrow night's digital concert, Igor Setkovich. Very nice to have both of you on the line. And Julian, I'm really looking forward to this concert tomorrow.
Thank you, Kara. It's great to be here on the phone, and we're also looking forward to this. It's our third digital concert hall, and it could be the program is wild, and I'm really looking forward to having this streaming on Friday, tomorrow.
And Igor, I hope you appreciate that Mr. Casals was directing that performance that I started the hour with. I was thinking of you as a cellist who would no doubt be a great appreciator of Casals as a player and even as a conductor.
Absolutely. Casals was really amazing person, yeah.
Well, it's wonderful that, Julian, you've put together a program of pieces that seem very fresh and modern, and they were written at all times of history. So perhaps you tell us what made you connect them. They are not from the same periods. Composers are wildly different. So how did you gather them all together under A Little Night Music?
Well, it's a really good question, Kara, and I'm not even sure that I have a great logical answer for you, but I've got an emotional answer. Mm-hmm. That these three pieces just, they feel to me like they complement each other so well. I often think of putting together a concert programming. I imagine the pieces as people, and I imagine if I had a dinner party, let's say, and I invited these three pieces to my home, would they have anything in common that they could talk about? And I think, you know, in my mind, the answer is a resounding yes. Despite the fact that they're all composers who grew up in Europe in the Germanic tradition, either in Austria or in Germany, each one of these pieces is in some way light and diverting, but still has an incredible amount of depth if you scratch the surface a little bit.
I understand that, and I can see how these three pieces as characters could have a great time at a dinner party, and I would want to be there too. Just to fill our listeners in, the three pieces are a suite from an opera called The Threepenny Opera, by Kurt Weill, and I believe, based on the recordings I've found, that the first suite features Winds, the Little Threepenny Music by Kurt Weill. And the second work will
That's
be
right.
the Gulda, Friedrich Gulda's Concerto for Cello and Wind Orchestra, which I have never heard before, and it just blew my mind yesterday and today. And finally, the familiar Mozart, Eine kleine Nachtmusik. It starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow, and tickets are available through the KalamazooSymphony.com website. So where do we begin? Since we have Igor with us, I wonder if we should talk about the Gulda.
Yeah, that sounds great, yeah.
Okay. I came across his name again. I've known him through Beethoven recordings and just articles, knowing that he had a wild array of interests. But recently I read Chick Corea's obituary, and it turns out that Friedrich Gulda had a really important influence on this American jazz player, helping him get into the idea of classical music and learning it and becoming a classical player, which Corea actually did. So that gives you a little clue as to Gulda's incredible diverse interests. So who would like to begin by filling out a little more with about Mr. Gulda.
I can jump in a little bit. I can try to give a little bit of a character sketch. He was a really strange and unique man. He wasn't very tall, and he was known as an exceptional pianist, but he was also known as a very eccentric person. And he would actually perform in concert barefoot, and he would often wear all sorts of outlandish clothing when he was playing with, you know, the most prestigious European orchestras. He was really known for his inquisitive mind and also his embrace of almost all forms of music. As you mentioned, Kara, he was well respected and enjoyed great relationships with many, many musicians, such as Chick Corea, many jazz musicians. He was very, very instrumental, pardon the pun, instrumental in developing what we now know as the third stream, which is sort of a mixture of jazz and classical and even rock and roll. And I think that this concerto that he wrote for a wonderful cellist, Heinrich Schiff, this concerto is kind of a pastiche or a collage of all sorts of musical styles. And I think maybe, Igor, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the directions that this piece goes in.
This is very, in any way, this is a very unique concerto, not only for cello, but in general for classical musicians to play. It really portrays his personality and his the switching between and putting the genres together. It's really, you can see that in this concerto, because I think even though it has five movements, these five movements cannot be more different. And they could all work as individual pieces, but somehow they also work as a unit, as a concerto. And I think that the first movement is probably the most different from them all, because it's pretty much like a rock, funk, jazz concerto for cello. It has, besides the wind orchestra, there is also the electric guitar, bass guitar, and the drum set. And they're very prominent accompaniment in this first movement, especially. And it's pretty, pretty wild movement, I would say. And then the second movement is ideal, and it's really a beautiful, beautiful, like a slow movement melody, but that also has, in a way, a funny, almost a valse in the middle. And then the third movement is probably, when it comes to like a classical music terms, most modern from all the other movements. And it's actually a cadenza for a cello. And usually we would have a cadenza written inside of a movement of a concerto, but because this cadenza is so long, it's pretty much entire movement is the cadenza. And the composer calls for two different places where cellos should improvise. Then there's a beautiful short minuet, and the last movement is just a lot of fun. It's like Julian always says, the polka. And it's for me, it's almost like listening to music from a circus. It's just a lot of fun, but it also has a little jazzy rock middle section. So it's just really all over the place, but somehow it works really well.
Igor, why haven't I heard this piece before? Does it need more champions?
Well, I mean, it's really one of those pieces that it's not played that often, and I don't really know why. I mean, I know a lot of cellists that either never heard of a piece at all, or heard that there is a Gulda cello concerto but never heard it, so they don't really know what to expect. And it was same with me. When I was a student doing my master's degree, we had a guest cellist come to play this, and I just went to the concert expecting to hear another modern cello concerto, but within 10 seconds I was, you know, my jaw was on the floor, and I was thinking, how do I not know this piece? I have to play this piece, and this should be, you know, much more performed. And it's just a really, really great piece that it's not out there yet, but I think it should be. It's
should
a lot of fun.
Be. And how did it come to your attention, Julian?
Well, I've known about it for years, and I've always wanted to program it, but maybe I can answer your question partly too, Kara, that to program this piece is actually quite challenging and quite difficult because, you know, if you're going to invite a soloist to perform with your orchestra, then most of the time you want to feature them in a work that will show off the whole orchestra as well. And this particular concerto uses a small, it's almost like a stage band. It's a small group of winds and brass with a rhythm section, and there are two basses. There's a bass, electric bass, and an upright bass. It's a very unique and strange ensemble, and it's only really this year with the Digital Concert Hall that we're able to bring these kind of more unique pieces to life. And I also want to add that when we make these films, we have cameras in the hall that we've got these great cameramen who are working to try to capture all of the emotion that's going on stage. And when Igor filmed his cadenza that he was talking about, that's the solo movement right in the middle, it was the most spectacular stage film setup that I've seen us do for one of these things, that we had him in the middle of the stage with spotlights on him, and there was a cameraman who was circling him with a very special camera that you can sort of, you know, get really close, up close to see everything that's happening. And I've seen the preview of the film, and it looks absolutely spectacular. I just can't wait to see it tomorrow.
It is released at 7 o'clock. Everyone can join in on their screens. And details on tickets and more are at KalamazooSymphony.com. And my hope is that all of the work that you and the musicians have put in this year to bring virtual performances to our screens will have some sort of future echo of just spreading the word on the Kalamazoo Symphony regionally and worldwide. Because, as you said, you're putting your best efforts into bringing live performance vividly to screen so that we can understand what, if we haven't been to the symphony in a while, we're missing. And if we are big fans, we can't wait to get back to Julian.
That's wonderful. I'm so happy that to hear you say that, because we've really put a lot of effort into our approach, and I think that it's pretty groundbreaking. I think if you look at the way that it's coming across on screen, it really brings the music out.
So this concerto by Friedrich Gulda, a German polymath, a brilliant pianist and composer who did not stick to one genre, he would have been, you know, savvy enough to know that a concerto with this instrumentation might not be programmed as much. Why did he stick to his guns, do you think, Julian?
Well, I believe that it was written for a specific festival and for a specific appearance with Heinrich Schiff, who was the soloist that it was written for. And often a composer will be tasked to write something for a particular group, and I think that's kind of what might have happened here. That it was already he had already sort of preconceived the size of the musician pool that he would have, and I think that part of it also is that he wanted to highlight the solo cello, and I think he didn't want to add any other strings to the mix. Aside from the double bass, but the cello is the only string instrument. Everything else are winds, and the cello, by the way, is amplified. He's going through this giant amplifier with a pickup on his cello. So it's not quite the cello that you might be used to.
I can hear Igor laughing a little bit in the background. Tell us about this setup and what it took to get comfortable working like that.
Yeah, I mean, the setup is always, we were always nervous, like, is it going to work or not? Because for my personal preparation, I didn't have to do anything different. And the amplification is just enough, I think, to make cello loud enough compared to all the other instruments, just to kind of be a little bit louder than everybody else, which would be impossible without a mic. But so when I play, I don't really even hear the amplification. I still can just hear my own sound coming from a cello because I'm right there. But I know when there's always this this moment of insecurity, if the mic is on, if the amp is on, if the levels are right, and it's just always it's always an extra thing that you have to plan on when you perform something like this, is that there are more things that can go wrong than usual. That's for sure.
Heinrich Schiff is no longer with us. He was one of the great 20th century soloists. Did you ever get a chance to meet him, or do you know his recordings, specifically of this concerto?
This concerto, he was the one playing the premiere, and there is actually a recording of it on YouTube, and it's really incredible. It's a lot of fun to see him perform this, but also because he was also very unique cellist, but also to see Gulga conducting this in his concert outfit and in his conducting style. It's it's a really a lot of fun to watch that. Schiff was just amazing cellist, but he was also a great teacher. I never had a chance to hear him play live, but I know a lot of his recordings, and a lot of his students are actually very famous cellists now.
Absolutely. Well, why don't we let listeners hear some of this cello concerto by Friedrich Gulda? I do have the overture queued up in a newer recording from a young player named Jakob Spahn, I think, in the Bavarian State Orchestra backing him up. Are you ready to take a break for this piece?
Oh, yeah. Let's take a break. Actually, Jakob is a friend of mine, so I'm really interested to hear this. I didn't know he recorded it.
Well, here it is. And we'll be back with the music director, Julian Querty of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, and the featured soloist, also principal cello of the KSO, Igor Chatkovich, after we hear this opening piece from the cello concerto by Friedrich Gulda. It's on tomorrow night's digital concert hall offering from the KSO starting at 7 p.m. You guys can't see me, but I am getting some real cardio done in the studio this morning. That is just so mind-blowing. Igor, I can totally understand why you were just so amazed when you first heard that cello concerto as an undergrad at Michigan State. Is that right?
Well, this was during my master's studies in Norway, but...
I totally lied.
Okay.
I know that you did study at Michigan State at one point with Mr. Bagratuni, but what a terrific piece. Julian, I sure noted how Gulda used, was it two chords to transition each time from, you know, the groove to the sort of Alpen serenade?
Yes, exactly. It's always a dominant and a tonic, and he brings it with those two chords. He's such a master. He brings, just using those two chords, the entire landscape changes, the entire world changes, and suddenly it's this idyllic classical context that is so unexpected.
The cello part seems so free. I'm wondering, Igor, if you are expected to bring improvisation to parts of this cello solo.
In the cadenza movement, there are two sections that are actually improvised, and there are certain guidelines to it, meaning like how long should it maybe last, or it should be centered around certain double stops, but it is up to a performer to improvise. And then with this first movement, it's just the way it's written, we just have to forget sometimes about our classical training and playing every little note, because it just kind of has to be a little bit out there. It has to sound free and improvised, especially in this first movement and, of course, in the cadenza. Yeah, but it's definitely a different mindset when you're trying to learn a piece like this.
I just had kind of lead guitar in mind, you know, like rock guitar. That's who you are right there in the overture.
Yeah, exactly.
So this piece, actually, we only heard one movement, but it encompasses many different surprises and moods. I thought I heard some like early music chords at the beginning of other movements. So kind of evoking the 16th century instead of the 20th. And I know, Igor, you did give us a preview of each of these movements, but I'd like to hear from Julian perhaps about some of the other influences that you can point out or point to in this concerto.
Well, as we said, each movement is so unique. We heard there the first movement. The second movement, I almost think of it as music of the Alps, but you know, very slow and rolling Alp horn melodies. And you know, I've actually been in parts of Switzerland and in Germany where people actually do sit out on the mountainside with these long Alp horns, and they play these wonderful long melodies. I think Gulda uses this idea in the concerto's second movement, which begins with a beautiful long horn solo that the cello then takes up. And there is then a very typical sort of Germanic peasant dance in the middle of this movement that's kind of like a minuet, a little bit faster. It's called a Ländler, which is basically a very simple country dance. And then the cadenza, which is the third movement that Igor has spoken a lot about, features the cello in a very free setting with a lot of different tools and tricks up his sleeve, improvisation and harmonics. He even puts in a little quote there from "I've Got a Gal in Kalamazoo," which you can probably pick out if you listen to our live stream tomorrow. And the fourth movement, I think, Kara, that's where you heard maybe some early music, because it does start with a guitar and the cello, and it's a very slow and restrained minuet, which also has a very wonderful and flowing middle section. But then we go back to the mountainside for the last movement. So, you know, in the area of, let's say, around Salzburg all the way to Munich, they have this long tradition of brass music, brass folk music, which ends up turning into what we today call the polka. So the last movement is this amazingly vigorous and energetic polka with the trumpets and the horns and the trombone blaring and Igor riding on top of this at a devilish speed. It's really, really fast. And in our rehearsals, you know, I sort of started it and I gave what I thought was a pretty fast tempo. And Igor kind of smiled and he looked at me and said, you know what, I'd like to try this a little bit faster. So it's amazing. It's incredible.
Well, you have to keep those feet dancing. The polka is not for slouches.
Exactly.
I love knowing that Gulda engineered this for an outdoor festival. You know, this is the right time of year. This, you know, being in the outdoors, evoking the country music of the German countries is kind of a really smart thing to do. And it's wonderful that, you know, Heinrich Schiff was up for such an unusual piece. And it all came together and we get to hear it here in Kalamazoo. I'm so excited about this performance starting tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Well, shall we give some time to Mr. Kurt Weill now, Julian? There's, again, I think there are reasons why they make sense together, especially the wind component. But Kurt Weill sounds like nobody else. He has interesting ways of taking a melody and twisting it to his purposes. How shall I say? I think his harmonizations are so unique to him. And I better stop there because I'm monologuing.
I think you've done such a great job of segueing and introducing Kurt Weill's music. You know, it's coming from Germany in the interwar period. This, you know, we call it the Weimar Republic, and there was so many groundbreaking art movements that were happening at that time. They were breaking boundaries. They were exploring. And one of the things that they really latched onto and they loved was the jazz music that was coming out of America at the time. So this is around, you know, the 1920s, so the late 1920s, and what's going on in the United States and in Germany. This was getting there sort of through a filter of an ocean and a culture. But a composer like Kurt Weill, who was incredibly interested in this, decided to adopt this as his own style. And he wrote the music for this three penny opera in this unbelievably rich cabaret style, featuring saxophones, trombone, trumpets, there's a banjo and a guitar. There's all sorts of great instruments that you don't typically have on the concert stage. And he paints this picture of sort of a smoky Berlin cabaret bar theater, and the music for this opera just jumps off the page. And I thought that the idea of having a composer who was recognized as one of these, you know, great, mold breakers, you know, somebody like Gulda did the same thing with his concerto. Weill was doing the same thing. He was basically getting rid of people's perception and trying to get rid of all of the baggage that people bring to listen to classical music, and instead writing this unbelievably new and exciting music. And it sounds so great, and the score is so unbelievably rich. It's a piece that I conducted for the first time in this recording. And it's a piece that I'm dying to program again. I just think it's so good.
Oh, that's wonderful. Kurt Weill, all his music contains a certain knowingness. If you want to hold on to your naivete and innocence, he's pretty much not the guy to turn to, because he just seems to understand the world is kind of messed up, but
right.
But he can still make you smile.
I agree. And he can find beauty in something that might actually be unpleasant, or even, it's such a contradiction, but beauty in ugliness. I mean, he can find something that's really not appealing and create out of it something unbelievably beautiful.
He had careers in both Germany and the United States. After was it World War II that brought him here, or did he come here earlier?
Just before, yeah, I think so.
And he was not so much a concert composer as a theater composer. Is that correct?
Well, he worked very closely with Bertolt Brecht, who was one of the most important figures in the German theater tradition of the 20th century. And they had this theater partnership where Kurt Weill would write the music and Brecht would write the book. I mean, it was kind of like one of these legendary partnerships like Gilbert and Sullivan or Rodgers and Hammerstein you had in Germany, Brecht and Weill, and they came out with all of these amazing pieces of musical theater, this Three Penny Opera being one of them. But this particular piece was actually based on a much, much older story. And in fact, it follows that story almost exactly. It was based on a piece called The Beggar's Opera, which dates about 200 years before the Three Penny Opera was actually written. It was from 1728, and it was presented and produced in London. And it was a parody. It was a send-up of Italian opera at the time by a writer named John Gay, and they basically stole all sorts of famous opera arias at the time, and John Gay wrote new satirical words to go along with them to tell this really, really dingy story about crime and corruption.
That's why I get confused. I think I heard that at least once in my music history, and then I know there's another Three Penny Opera. What comes around goes around a lot in music and theater,
right,
as well. And Kurt Weill created one piece out of this opera that pretty much everybody knows, and perhaps we should hear that one tune. It's called Mac the Knife, Julian?
That's right, The Ballad of Mac the Knife, and it's just wonderful. It's right at the beginning of the opera, and it's this ancient form of song that was actually something that people really did back in Renaissance Italy. It was a song that, and you know what's really funny to me is that you see this now today on social media, on YouTube. It was a big craze maybe about 5 years ago, that this type of ballad, you have a singer who stands up and they have a whole bunch of stacks of paper with pictures on them. And as they sing, they turn the pages and you get to see the next picture. And it's sort of this way of storytelling visually and with music. And so this is The Ballad of Mac the Knife. This is at the beginning of the opera, and it's sung and told in this way. The version that we do is without any singers. We do just the concert version, which Weill created afterwards for the conductor Otto Klemperer, who commissioned it. So, Kara, I guess we'll can we listen to Mac the Knife? I think that'd be great.
Yes, take 2 minutes for this wonderful song we all know. And I'd like to remind our listeners that you can hear the full Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra performance of the Little Three Penny Opera Suite, the Cello Concerto by Friedrich Gulda, and Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. Details at kalamazoosymphony.com. Music from the Three Penny Opera. That's the tune Mac the Knife, a very straightforward, lovely tune with all those disturbing undercurrents in the orchestration.
It's wonderful. And, you know, it brings to mind all of those great artists that have, since he's written it, have performed that tune and made their own version of, you know, Louis Armstrong. And I mean, so many people have played this. It's such an amazing yet simple melody. And a little bit of trivia here, this tune, this song, was actually not even originally in the Three Penny Opera. It was written in haste, I think, a couple days before the opera went up in Berlin, because the character who was playing Mac the Knife or MacHeath, he demanded that his character get a proper introduction. He said he was going to walk if he didn't get one. So Kurt Weill just, you know, sat down at his desk and he penned this in a couple hours. And I think it's just an unbelievable piece.
Well, that's a great piece that resulted from a tantrum, it sounds like.
Right.
Sometimes they pay off. Well, we're nearing the end of our time with Julian Quercy, the music director of the Kalamazoo Symphony, and cellist Igor Chetkovich, who is principal cellist and the soloist in Gulda's Concerto, in the digital broadcast tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. It's part of the Final Fridays Digital Concert Hall, and tomorrow's concert is called A Little Night Music. So here at the end of our time, let's talk a little about a piece we all know so well, Eine kleine Nachtmusik by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. From the point of view of your musicians, Julian, you've balanced things so nicely. The wind players had their time to shine in the viol and the gulda, and here it's time for your string sections to, you know, enjoy their sound.
Yes, to bask in this beautiful, charming little work by Mozart. I was thinking a lot about this program, about how to close it off, and I just thought that this was going to be the perfect piece, the antidote for all of the complexity, and also to answer the jazz and the rock feeling from the first two pieces. I just thought that Mozart was a great palate cleanse and a sort of a breath of fresh air and very optimistic piece. It's one of his best known pieces. It was written right at the time that he was writing, I believe, Don Giovanni. And, you know, usually he wouldn't just put down his pen in the middle of an opera and write something else. So there must have been some reason for him to have written this, but we don't know anymore. There's no record of it. So it may have just been written on a whim. But it's not a piece that's overly intellectual. It's very emotional. It's a piece that in the form we play it today, we're actually missing one of the movements. It originally had two minuet and trios. So it had the opening allegro, then it had the first minuet and trio that's gone now. We don't know where it went or if Mozart himself moved it. It has a beautiful slow movement that really is so peaceful and just lulls you into this wonderful meditative state. And then there's the second minuet and trio, which is the one that we still have today. We play that one. And then the finale, which is so boisterous and mischievous in some ways and sparkling.
Well, that will take us to the end of this hour, and we'll have to leave it there and listen tomorrow. We get to see the musicians on stage from our screens starting at 7 o'clock. The Kalamazoo Symphony, led by Julian Quercy, my guest today, as well as featuring Igor Chetkovich, I'm sorry, I may have tried both this hour. Igor, thank you for joining us, and I really look forward to seeing your performance of the Gulda Concerto. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you.
We'll leave it with the opening movement of the Serenade by Mozart, and I look forward to next time.